This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Monica Brain. Weekends are for relaxing, spending time with family, and having fun for many New Mexicans. In New Mexico, there are a bunch of options for experiencing something new on the weekends, including festivals. Of course, the most notable is probably the Balloon Fiesta in the fall, but there are many others with themes from lavender to macaroni and cheese. What benefits do these festivals bring to our state? And what are the key ingredients that make them profitable? And how do they benefit local businesses? Phone lines are open. Give us a call. The number is 277-5866 or comment on Twitter using the hashtag Let's Talk New Mexico. Tell us about some of your favorite festivals here in New Mexico. Joining us now in the studio is Dr. Shell Sanchez. She's the Director of Cultural Services for the City of Albuquerque. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So when we're looking at the landscape of festivals in New Mexico, about how many are there?
Well, just in Albuquerque, there's, depending on how you define a festival, somewhere around 50 that happen consistently every year. Some of those have been going on. You've got a couple here that have been going on for decades. And then there's some other big festivals around the state in Taos and Santa Fe. But my list is Albuquerque-centric.
Of course. And what are some of your favorite festivals that you like to attend in Albuquerque?
Well, I personally kind of show up at Globalkerque every year, and that's a little, I've been involved with that for a long time. I love the International Revolutions Theater Festival, but there's also a lot of other smaller festivals, the Off-Center Folk Festival that's, I think it's in September now, downtown, and I like festivals that have food, so I'm also a big fan of the Lavender and Garlic Festival, the Grecian Festival, because I can actually walk there instead of trying to figure out how to park downtown. So I think, you know, it's just amazing the landscape that we have, because it ranges from, you know, a very small, maybe park-based, to like multi-day huge festivals that bring in tons of people. So something for everyone.
Yeah, lots of options. Let's talk about the economics of festivals. Particularly, you mentioned there's some several big festivals. What kind of tax revenue do they bring to the city?
Well, if you're really talking about an infusion of money, that really depends on the festival. Some of them are really based on our local community. And so, I mean, that's great for local vendors, and it's great for us to be supporting local vendors and local businesses, and also just building community together. There's a few festivals that are major tourist attractions. Of course, we all know the International Balloon Fiesta, that goes without saying, but also Gathering of Nations. That is actually more outside visitors than local visitors to that festival. And that's probably, those are probably the two biggest in terms of percentages that bring outside people.
We're talking festivals today. If you've got something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 277-5866. What are some of your favorite festivals in New Mexico? And do you have a festival in your area that brings a boost to the local economy? Call us and share. You can also tweet us at KUNM News and use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. And Dr. Sanchez, are there tax breaks that are available for some festivals? You know, you mentioned that they bring in a lot of some of the bigger ones bring in a lot of outside visitors, that those are outside dollars that are coming in. Does it sort of balance it out?
Yeah, there aren't any tax breaks that are available for festivals, but there are also no special taxes. There are some permit fees depending on the festival and what it's doing and where it is, but there's no specific incentives.
Well, let's bring in a few more voices to this conversation and actually hear about some of these festivals. Also in the studio with us today is Nikki Panagopoulos. She's a volunteer for the St. George Grecian Festival. Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you for having me.
And we have David Hudson. He is the chairman of the Lavender in the Village Committee. Welcome, David.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nikki, let's start with you. The Grecian Festival, it's been going on quite a long time. Tell us about it.
It's been 43 years since it was started by a few volunteers at St. George Greek Orthodox Community. And as we heard earlier, it's downtown, which is great because, you know, it's convenient for people. It's always the first full weekend of Balloon Fiesta, which is this year, it's October 5th, 6th, and 7th. We tried a couple different weekends, and you know, consistency is a big thing when you're planning a festival. So everyone knows when it is. And it's 3 days long. We work really hard and we start planning right after New Year's.
So that's really interesting. So it's at the same time as the Balloon Fiesta, and you don't worry about, not having enough visitors because so many people are going to the Balloon Fiesta, or is it like you're trying to ride on their coattails?
We're older than the Balloon Fiesta, but the nice thing is everyone goes and sees the balloons in the morning, they take a nap, and they come see us in the evening.
One of the things that I really noticed when the first time I went to the Grecian festival, my sister and I went together, and we're big fans of things that are well organized. And it standing in line went by really quickly. Everything was so, there wasn't a lot of like chaos and confusion about it. And so we could just get to the festival and enjoy it. Is that something that you've sort of developed through the years, a process of making sure that you get the crowds, in and enjoying in an orderly fashion?
That's one of the goals, to make this as easy as possible to go. One of the things we've done is we have a park and ride, because it is very hard to park in that area. You go, it's like University and Lomas is that corner. They drop you off at the front door. You get in. They take your money. There's different booths for you to, the banks. We use tickets because it's easier to control. And we have divided up the food, the dancing, the marketplace. It's just a bunch of volunteers who've worked. We have a wrap up of festival afterward. What worked? What didn't? What we can improve on? And what foods to eliminate? What was not a big hit? And did the dancers? How was the entertainment schedule? Now we have cooking lessons. People have asked for that. Language lessons. So it is a growing process for us and for any festival, I think.
What was something that in like a wrap-up year that you really said, okay, this is something we've got to change?
There are certain things you can't change. Like if there's a Lobo football game, that hurts. I think we tinkered with the time, on what time to end the festival. Prices are always big. Was it too expensive? How did setup go? How did the permit process go? Advertising, the big thing with us is how do we get the word out? We started adding Snapchats, the filters for the younger generation, and, what liquor to sell, where to place things. Sometimes, do you want to have the bank right near, the bar? Where are the jumpies going? That kind of thing. We have a great group of volunteers, and we also have tours, for the church. So it's kind of a multifaceted festival. It is the culture and it's the faith.
When is the Grecian festival this year?
It is October 5th, 6th, and 7th.
We're talking about festivals today. If you've got a favorite festival that you like to attend, give us a call. The number is 277-5866. Out of the Albuquerque area, you can also call us at 877-899-5866. Do you have any gripes about festivals? Maybe you've attended something and you thought, I could reorganize that in a better way. Call us and share. You don't have to share the name of the festival, but we want to hear your thoughts. And what kind of economics revenue does it bring to your area? Is it something that improves your neighborhood? All opinions are welcome. The number again is 277-5866. David Hudson is with us. He's the chairman of the Lavender in the Village Committee. Lavender Festival, talk to us about it.
Well, it's been going on for 15 years, not nearly as long as the Grecian, or the Balloon Fiesta, but we've been growing steadily every year from the beginnings of about 15 years ago with about four intelligent ladies who decided they would drink tea and have some lavender, lavender tea. And so from there at Los Poblanos, it grew into a festival at the village barn in the village of Los Ranchos. And then when the village acquired the old Anderson Vineyards on Rio Grande Boulevard, we moved to that venue, and that's allowed us to have more vendors, more attendees, and more activities.
And what are some of the activities that are available at the? I've seen pictures. There's a yoga class. I remember I attended one time, and someone had lavender ice cream. But there's a lot of activities. I notice a lot for kids.
Yes, we feature agricultural and children's activities. One thing we had last year that was a surprisingly popular activity was a chess game played with large chess players, not the players themselves, but the figures, and under a tent. And kids, young kids, surprising their interest in playing chess. But we'll bring that back again next year. And we have cooking classes. We have yoga classes, all included in the entry fee. And we have beekeepers. So we're really anxious, and we are promoting agriculture in the area and in the village in particular.
And what are some lessons learned through the years that you've sort of picked up about, you know, how to make these more successful?
Well, due to the fact that our venue is in the middle of a residential area, we are plagued by not adequate parking. So this year, once again, we're instituting shuttle buses from three local elementary schools, their parking lots. We got very few complaints from the neighbors who we constantly block their driveways, and we apologize for that. But it's difficult for parking.
So parking's a big challenge as well for the Lavender Festival.
Yes, we don't want to pave over the agricultural land at the
to make a parking lot for the festival. Right,
right.
Dr. Sanchez, you know, parking—it's a problem in every place and major cities and things like that. Do you find that the most successful festivals are the ones that have the park and ride to offer, you know, an opportunity for folks to get in and not have to search around for parking, things like that?
Yeah, I think parking and access to the event is something to consider as the festival grows. I mean, all of these festivals are kind of at different levels. These, you know, the two that are represented in the studio have been doing this for a long time, and so they really have a following. But yeah, it's definitely something to consider, and it's part of the permitting process. So there are people to help at the city to help people think through these things and figure out where to do it. But I think planning for parking and also just figuring out if you can encourage people to use public transportation, if you can encourage people to bike, because there are some of these venues that are accessible from other routes, and sometimes we just need to remind people that there's other ways to get there.
Nikki, what about you? Is there something on the website or information about how to take public transportation to the festival?
That's one of the things that it's on the abqgrecianfest.com. Also, if people want to know more about it, we have a Facebook page. We're doing Twitter. And we emphasize that. Your life is so much easier than trying to parallel park in those neighborhoods because, you know, those of us who've lived here for a while have forgotten that skill. I think that one of the things I noticed when I went to the Lavender Festival is how gracious and how kind those volunteers were, and they answered questions. So I think maybe another thing you add is your volunteers need to be educated before the event how to help people, you know, with the parking and the other questions.
Volunteers, now that is something that no festival would be able to accomplish without them, and we definitely want to talk a little bit more about that. We're about to go to a break, but David, where can folks learn about it, the Lavender Festival, as well as when the dates are?
Well, we have an online presence at lavenderinthevillage.com, and we have billboards all over town. And so there's no central phone number that they can call. We just need, and we're also on Facebook.
And when is the dates of it?
It's one date, July 7th.
July 7th.
Saturday.
Is the Lavender Festival. Well, this is Let's Talk New Mexico, and we are talking about festivals today. Give us a call and share your favorite festival that you like to attend. Also, we want to hear from small business merchants listening in. Do you use festivals to sell your items? do they pay for the cost of the table? After the break, we're going to get more into the economics of these festivals. Are they money-making ventures, or are they just a labor of love? But everybody is welcome to the conversation. Give us a call at 277-5866. We'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from the 12th Annual Lavender Festival. Live music, yoga, kids camp, 90 growers and artisans offering everything lavender. This Saturday from 9 to 5 at the Agri Nature Center across from Los Poblanos. Info at lavenderinthevillage.org.
This Saturday on the Children's Hour, the students from Play Conservatory will perform the Tiny Play Firebird live in our studio, and we'll be video streaming the performance. With great music, a family events calendar, the Children's Hour birthday club, and so much more. It's all in an hour, the Children's Hour, Saturdays, 9 to 10 a.m.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Monica Brain. Summer is in full swing, and when it comes, it comes with a lot of events and festivals around the state. Are you looking forward to the Mac and Cheese Fest? Or maybe you never miss Global Kirky, which happens in September. Call us and share. The number is 277-5866, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. And tell us what are some of your favorite festivals in New Mexico. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Kelly in Silver City. Hey there, Kelly. What would you like to share today?
Hi, good morning, Monica. I'm a project coordinator for Clay Festival in Silver City. The festival runs from July 16th through July 21st, and we have some wind-down activities on the Sunday. This is one way to really get in touch with a lot of artists and market vendors throughout the week. It's a week-long festival, as I said, and there are lectures, hands-on clay workshops. This year, for the first time, we're having something that capitalizes on cultural entrepreneurship. We're having an entrepreneurship workshop for creatives, and that's also going to be going on through all the week. And then finally, we have on the Friday a real treat. The museum at WNMU is having a limited preview of their newly renovated facility. There'll be an opportunity to see Mimbres and Mohion pieces. It is a limited display at this time because the museum won't be fully open, but it's a chance to see the greater things to come. That's followed by a gallery walk in the evening where the gallery owners throw open their doors and everybody can walk through and see their art and take a really nice twilight stroll.
Kelly, is this festival mostly like pottery? When you say clay, what do you mean?
Yes, Monica, it is pottery, but also the lectures touch upon the land and the history of this area. One of our lecturers will be speaking about La Luz pottery out of Tularosa Basin. Another will be speaking about the land itself in the Gila area. And then there will actually be artists doing lectures, too. In addition to that, potters will be doing the workshops.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And again, where can folks learn about the Silver City Clay Festival?
Sure, Monica. You can check us out at www.clayfestival.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
Thanks so much for giving us a call from Silver City. And you can join the conversation as well. The number is 277-5866, or if you're outside of the Albuquerque area, 877-899-5866. We're talking festivals today, and we want to hear from you. What are some of your favorite festivals? Or maybe you find yourself sitting out the festivals because you feel like the entry fee is too expensive. Everyone's welcome to the conversation today. Give us a call and share your experience, 277-5866. And David Hudson is with us. He's from the Lavender in the Village Committee. He's the chairman of the Lavender in the Village Committee. and Nikki Panagopoulos. She's from the St. George Grecian Festival. We also have Dr. Shell Sanchez. She's the Director of Cultural Services for the City of Albuquerque. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about volunteers. And David, talk to us about the volunteers. I imagine that you probably have to have a good number of them to make this festival happen.
Exactly. We use about, or not say we use, but we have about 30 or 40 volunteers for the one day, because we've got parking issues, traffic issues, and just generally directions for people that are at the festival that want to know, where's the lavender? Where's the beekeeping? Where's the chess game? So we have circulating volunteers. And when you're out there at this pleasant 80 to 100 degree weather.
Yeah, it is pretty hot.
We have everyone on short shifts.
Oh, that's, I imagine that's something that you learned after much vocalizing from the volunteers.
Yes.
And what about you, Nikki? I mean, it looks to me like when I've visited the Grecian Festival that there's a lot of volunteers there.
I can't give you an exact number, but the committee itself is 30 to 40 people. We have people who come and sign up for two-hour shifts, all-day shifts. We have dance instructors. We have people who do the lamb. You know, they're there the night before the setup. We have volunteers who are, you know, 4 years old. They work in my booth. I do the baklava Sunday. And, you know, we want everyone to feel involved. And it's not only our parish and our community, the Greek community. We have people who come and volunteer who act, you know, actively seek us out and say, we really want to help. It's so much fun. And I think if you appreciate your volunteers, you get them back. And like you said, if you hear the volunteers not happy about, you know, for bathroom breaks or, you know, their shift length, then you know, you're going to lose them the next year. But it's always about making your volunteers feel appreciated. And you always say, we can't do it without you.
How does the Lavender Festival help their volunteers feel appreciated?
We feed them.
That's a good way to do that.
And we're starting earlier, an hour earlier this year. We started at 10 previous years. We're starting at 9. So at least there'll be some of the overnight coolness lingering.
Well, let's take a call. We've got Alaska here in Albuquerque. Hey there, Alaska.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And what would you like to share about festivals today?
Yes, well, I can definitely speak to almost every aspect that you guys are talking about. I help work and with the rail yards market at the historic rail yards in Albuquerque. And I just wanted to mention how festivals and events can benefit our very local communities and the neighborhoods that we're in, especially farmers markets. I very much so relate to all the things you're talking about, because the Rail Yards Market is like putting on a festival every single Sunday. We're at the historic Rail Yards from 10 to 2 every Sunday, and we have over 100 vendors of food, farms, and art, also interactive educational spaces, free yoga, and I want to emphasize the importance to us of making our kind of mini festival free to increase participation and community investment as well. I know you said sometimes the ticket prices of festivals can turn people away, and it's always really important to us to have free programming, free kid zone, free music, free bike valet, free parking to, you know, keep our neighborhood strong and active.
Alaska, if you feel comfortable sharing, can you talk to us a little bit about the economics of it? Is it self-sustaining? Does it are you able to, you know, with the costs that go into putting on the festival, does it pay for itself? I mean, the rail yards market, which is like a festival every weekend.
It is absolutely a full-time production that takes a lot of energy, just like any other festival. I'm sure Dr. Sanchez can speak to the amount of work. We work directly with cultural services and city council and planning, do all the event permitting, just like any special event. And it does take a lot of support. We get support from the city. We're a nonprofit. We write grants constantly. We work year-round to put on the event. It's on Sundays, May through October, but it's definitely a year-round endeavor. We do rely on a lot of volunteers, but we also have to employ staff just to keep the project going and smooth for all our vendors. We have some vendor fees, but most of our economic support comes from our partners, the City of Albuquerque, grant funding, and fundraising efforts.
Alaska, thank you so much for giving us a call. We really appreciate it.
You and I would just like to thank Dr. Shell Sanchez and the city for supporting the market and all of the effort that goes into it. I really appreciate this conversation.
Thank you, Alaska. You know what I would like to say? It's an interesting question of sustainability and whether or not it pays for itself, because I feel like too many times we're looking at that in a strictly kind of financial, you know, very limited financial balance sheet kind of way. And I think it's much bigger than that. And I feel like the people that are in the room kind of attest to that, that a lot of it is not necessarily can you pay for everything you need to pay for that day, for that festival to keep it going, because a lot of the payoff comes later. You know, the Lavender Festival, maybe that day takes a lot of volunteers, but it's really elevating lavender and agriculture in our city and in our state, and that work pays off year-round. The same thing with the Rail Yards Market. They're really incubating and supporting these artisans and food vendors year-round and giving them places to connect with community, and I think that's really important. And the vibrancy that all of these festivals bring to our city, that's something that's really hard to measure economically, but it's critical to have a place that a lot of interesting and vibrant and, you know, different and sometimes quirky and unrelated things are happening every single weekend. That makes the city attractive to tourists and attractive to business and attractive, you know, to people that want to move here and relocate here. So the question of economics to me is a little more subtle than, you know, can it just pay for itself? Because usually it can't.
I'm curious if you've ever had to actually do those hard numbers or convince someone, you know, that this is worth it. Like you're saying, it's difficult to put a number on these things that benefit the community long term. But have you ever, you know, been in a circumstance where it's sort of like, well, I need the numbers. I need to know if this is going to work, is worth it.
I haven't had to do that. I mean, I've been part of a lot of festivals. I've been part of organizing a lot of events. And I don't think that we've ever had to justify it quite in that way. And I think people have to decide those things for themselves, because I think it's true. Most of these are, they start as a labor of love. And then you find a community that supports you and a community that wants to come along as volunteers, as organizers. And there's something, I think, even more powerful than the base economics of it, of community and building this kind of connection and places to be and gather together around shared interests, whether it's movies or food or culture or ethnic heritage or dance. These are the things that festivals do, and they create these spaces, these shared spaces where we celebrate these things that are important to us. Sometimes it's our place, it's our neighborhood, it's our favorite food. And those things I don't think you can quantify. And when you really look at it, I don't think there's very many people that would argue with you that those things are critical to a really healthy and beautiful city.
Is there a festival you look forward to every single year? Give us a call and share. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 277-5866. Is there one that's particularly great for families that you enjoy taking your kids to, your grandkids to? If you're in if you're outside Albuquerque, you can call us at 1-877-899-5866. And David, we talked a little bit about the activities for kids and things like that, but you also mentioned that your focus is on agriculture. Can you share a little bit more about that? Is the Lavender in the Village Committee, is that part of a farm or some kind of initiative that does agriculture?
Well, we support the kids camp, which, if you're not familiar with that, it's an activity that's given 1 week in the spring, March, and then 3 weeks in the summer, where kids are invited And if they qualify, which is a small tuition, which Lavender Festival underwrites the tuition, the kids spend a week learning about farming because it's taking place right at the Agri-Nature Center, which was the old Anderson Vineyard, surrounded by foreign fields. So we want kids to understand that food does not always come from cans or cardboard right. boxes. In fact, the highlight from my perspective is that during the last day, the kids go out and harvest wheat, come back, and tomatoes, and they come back to the village, the kitchen at the farm camp, and actually make a pizza from crops they've gathered themselves out in the fields. So it's very instructional, and it opens up, I think, people's or kids' ideas to, wow, there's something to agriculture and farmers.
I remember the first time that I got a spider plant to live, and I felt like master of the universe. You know, it was like, what kind of reactions do you get from the kids when they're seeing this whole process the whole way through?
Well, the kids are very excited during the whole whole week. And the event, the weeks fill up every year. So word must get around that this is definitely worthwhile. And the kids are very involved. I mean, they're much more involved than I was when I was 6 years old in education. So I think being outdoors and in a farm field and in that environment promotes their interest.
Nikki, what about you? The Grecian festival, I know there's lots of activities for kids there. You mentioned something about jumpers.
We contract with a company that does face painting. There's those jumpers, and you have an all-day pass, you know, for the kids because it keeps them occupied while their parents are trying all the baked goods that are wonderful. we have women who are in their 80s who are baking after the first of the year. So we have, you know, Greek dance lessons. We have, different things the kids can do and families can do together. We do the church tours where they can come and see the iconography that, you know, we had commissioned a few years back. It is something to have the families there. If you cannot make it work for families, you're going to lose the base, your daytime base. The evening is for the younger people. But, you know, we try to keep prices low, and we have little trinkets they can buy and, you know, little books. So it's a lot of fun. And the music always makes everyone want to dance.
Do you have outside vendors, or is it everything at the festival is run by St. George?
We have outside vendors. We actually have a woman who comes, I think it's from Florida, with beautiful Greek jewelry, you know, and there's clothing. There's someone who makes soap. They're there. We have our own marketplace, but our outside vendors are really important because they bring some diversity. They help us focus on what we're good at, the food and the activities. They bring the merchandise in.
And if you're comfortable sharing a little bit about, like, how much do you charge the vendors to have a table at the festival?
I'm not sure. Something, you know, there's some that may pay, you know, $1,000, you know, it depends. I'm not sure about those numbers, but we try to keep it affordable, and we try to make them feel valued. You know, that they're there, they're giving up their weekend. They're taking a huge risk. They could be there all day, and if the weather doesn't cooperate, they're not going to sell anything.
What about you, David? Outside vendors in the festival?
Many. We tried for the first several years to have only merchants in Los Ranchos. We wanted to make it Los Ranchos village specific.
Oh, okay.
And we found that was all good, but it wasn't enough because we were having 10 to 12,000 people, and they would like to see not the same vendors every year. So we've gone to outside vendors. We have 80 vendors this year, 80 booths, and that gives them variety and, again, provides more other vendors than were there the year before and the year before that.
What kind of feedback do you hear from the vendors about the benefits of being at the Lavender Festival?
Well, we had to turn away about 40 vendors.
Oh, wow.
So that speaks for itself.
Well, this is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking festivals today. If you want to get in on the conversation, there is still time. It's 277-5866 or 1-877-899-5866. David Hudson is with us from the Lavender Festival. We also have Nikki Panagopoulos and Dr. Shell Sanchez. She's the director of the cultural services for the city of Albuquerque. And we'd love to hear from you. We're going to go to a short break. We'll talk right after this.
Native women's skirts come in nearly as many styles as there are tribes. Many of them have a unique aesthetic and cultural significance. In some Native communities, skirts convey personal and tribal identity. They are also often important in how women take part in ceremony. Join us as we talk about Native skirts on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
It's time for that old car or truck to protest the heat again. If it wants to quit, give it a cool new life powering your favorite radio station. It gets to do some real good, even when it doesn't run anymore. And you get a tax deduction and a KUNM membership. If you prefer online, go to KUNM.org. Under support, click Donate Your Vehicle. If you'd rather call, it's 888-KUNM-CAR.
I'm Monica Brain. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're kicking back and talking about festivals today. Did you catch the Fermented Foods Festival last weekend? Do you like the free samples at festivals? Or do you go for the workshops? Give us a call. It's 277-5866 or comment on Facebook. Just search for KUNM Radio. Let's add another voice to our conversation today. Joining us now in the studio is Robert Mendez. He is the co-owner of Carnivore Popcorn Company. Welcome.
Thank you.
So now we were talking a little bit about vendors before the break. You're on the other side. You're a vendor. You've used festivals when you first started your popcorn company as a way to let people know about your product. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I would say that festivals have been a key aspect of our success, because collaborations and being able to get our product out without having a huge advertising budget initially is important. And the festivals give us an opportunity to get our product in front of thousands of people at one time. And so most of the festivals that we go to are usually lower cost ones because we were, you know, initially starting out. But the return was huge for us.
I know one of the things about your company is that there's always this big row of samples, mm-hmm. So you can try the different kinds of popcorn that you have. Do you ever, worry that you're spending too much money on giving out free product and it's not really balancing out?
No, we've never had that concern, because a lot of people walk by our booth and if they don't have a chance to sample it, they think it's like everything else they've ever tried. Mm. And it's not until we actually get our product in their mouth that they realize that it's something completely different and it's a different experience. And it's been a huge for our success. I would say that people who come by our booth who don't try, and the people who do, there's probably about a boost of about 50% in our closing ratio with people who just try our product.
So. Do you ever have people who just come and just eat sample after sample after sample?
Yeah, we call them campers. And we used to make fun of it because it was a lot of times it was kids, but now it's becoming adults more. They like to come over and then they'll eat and they'll try them all and then they'll go and then they'll come back and they'll go, oh, I'll try this. And but at the end of the day, most people feel compelled after they've tried so many samples to at least buy a bag and take one home. So it works out.
In the beginning, did you ever worry about the cost of buying a table at one of these festivals, like actually being able to pay for it, an even match?
Initially, it was a little bit of a concern, but once we started going to the festivals and understanding how to work the festival to make it successful, it wasn't as much of a risk. And there are festivals that we go to that aren't a fit for our product. And so we find that out usually by going to the festival and realizing that it's not a fit. So there's no really other way to find out unless you go and test out the market and see if your product's going to fit in that arena or not.
What made a festival not a fit for your popcorn?
Well, we went to a recent event that it was a tournament, and it was a 3-day tournament, and everybody came in from all over the state, and they came in their campers. And so what they did is they brought all of their food and their drink and everything with them. And so what they would do is they would come down, they would play their game, and then they would go right back to their camper. And so what happened was they weren't interested in sampling popcorn. They weren't interested in trying anything. They just wanted to get back to their camper where the beer was and where all of their stuff that they had brought. So that wasn't really a fit for us. We're more of an artisan-type product, and we're looking for an artisan-type client. But and again, you know, that was something that we thought for sure we would do really well at, and it was the complete opposite. And we wouldn't have known that unless we'd gone to the market or mm-hmm. gone to that event. So,
what are some of your favorite festivals?
Some of my favorite festivals? Oh, gosh. I do love the Lavender Fest. We were a part of the Lavender Fest last year. It's actually, we made some garlic popcorn for the Lavender Fest, Lavender and Garlic Fest last year. We hadn't really got around to the lavender part yet. Lavender is difficult when you're dealing with food because if you don't get it right, it comes out tasting like a bar of soap sometimes. So, you know, it was tough, but the garlic came out fantastic. We had a great response on that. And this year we are on the waiting list for the Lavender Fest. So we're sitting around with our fingers crossed. We do have a sweet lavender popcorn that we have created just in case we get in. And we have tested that product out actually at the rail yards and the downtown growers market. And we've had a huge response to it. So it's good. We just need to, we'd love to be able to promote it. And if we don't get into the Lavender Fest, we do have a couple vendors there that are willing to, that are considering putting it out as well as in addition to what they've got, because it is a very unique product. Nobody's ever had lavender popcorn before.
No, I have to say I've never tried that before.
Monica, can I just say something too about, just as a vendor, I mean, talking about whether or not it's a fit for you, I think is really important, but also I've seen these guys at festivals and at different events selling their fabulous popcorn. And they're also very engaging. They're very, you know, they're very present. They're very kind of forward in their booth. They're, you know, they're ready to talk to people. They invite people over. I mean, the popcorn invites people over too, but I mean, that's part of it. So, I mean, some of that success as a vendor is knowing how to be there and knowing that in the festival kind of realm, you have to be much more active and much more kind of energetic and ready to engage with people. And so that's one of the reasons that they've been successful, besides the fabulous popcorn.
Yeah, I imagine it's not one of those situations where you can sit back and watch Netflix on your phone and then, you know, somebody's like, I want to buy some popcorn. You know, you have to be active and talking about it. And your company has a really interesting story. So I imagine, is there an opportunity to sort of sell that and share that with folks at festivals?
I think that people, they see our story after they've tried our popcorn. They'll come to a festival and we'll get them over to our booth and they'll try something. And mainly we, you know, we'll call out a flavor that they've never heard before and they're just intrigued. Like, what is that? I need to go see what this is about. And they'll try our popcorn and they'll buy a bag and they'll go home and they'll share it with somebody. And they'll all, wow, we need to find out more about this. And they'll go to our webpage and they'll read our story. You know, I mean, we've got a very compelling story. And what that does is that gets them more engaged with our company. That gets them more engaged with our story. And so we find that those customers come back out looking for us at other events to support us. Because not only do we have a fantastic product, but we've got a fantastic story and a fantastic success story in that. So, yeah.
We're talking festivals today. There is still time if you want to give us a call. It's 277-5866. Let's talk to Niamey in Albuquerque. I'm so sorry. How do you pronounce your name?
Niamey.
Welcome. Thank you for giving us a call.
I just wanted to say I've been part of an organization for 17 years that presents its Lynn's Martial Arts Academy. And we present a Chinese New Year celebration for the public every year. And we haven't been able to become as large as a festival, but it is a contribution to community events. And we have a lot of people who come and follow us, and very entertaining. And it's part of a cultural dynamic, too.
And where can folks learn more about it?
We're located... it's the Chinese Culture Center, Albuquerque. We're located at 427 Adams Southeast, and we do have a website.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We really appreciate it. Let's go to Noel, also in Albuquerque. Hey there, Noel.
Hello.
Hi. And what would you like to share about festivals today?
Great. Well, I'm one of the organizers for the ABQ Recycled Art Fair that happens every year in April. And so I was listening to your program and hearing about all the other great festivals, and we're pretty proud of ours. We're going into our 10th anniversary. In 2019, we'll have our 10th anniversary. And we have a group of fantastic vendors creating all kinds of beautiful recycled artwork.
When you say recycled art, do you mean like art that's created from recyclable materials or art that was already created that you're just giving to someone else?
So the parameters for the vendors is that they have to use 75% materials that would otherwise be destined to the landfill. So we have people taking apart pallets and or old chairs, and there are people who are, you know, taking glass, broken glass, and making that into art. And there are people who are taking old clothes and making them into bags. So there's quite a variety.
And what is your favorite part of this festival?
Oh, well, walking around and seeing all the creativity is amazing. You know, there are people who can turn junk into magnificent masterpieces. And then there's an educational component, too. There's a youth market. So we work with several schools throughout the year and get them equipped to be informed about recycling and to make their own artwork, and they sell it. And so that's a really exciting part of the fair.
Noelle, where can folks learn more about this?
Well, we have a Facebook site and we're also on Instagram, so just ABQ Recycled Art Fair.
Noelle, thanks so much for giving us a call from Albuquerque. And if you want to give us a call, there is still time, 277-5866. Dr. Sanchez, okay, so I'm totally inspired by this, and I've decided I'm going to just start my own festival. I'll just put it in the street in front of my house. I'm not sure what the theme is yet, but can I just, you know, put up a sign and say festival here, or is there a little more that's maybe has to go into it?
Well, I would suggest you do a little more thinking about what it is first, because I think a theme is pretty compelling. But in terms of the city, if you're going to have a public event, even if it's on private property, then you have to get a special event permit. And a special event permit is actually not like one piece of paper that somebody signs off on. It's actually a process that you go through. And the best place to start is with the Cultural Services Department, because we have somebody who spends half of his time just helping people through the special event process. So if you're going to do it in front of your street, you're probably going to have to block off your street. And so you have to get special permission. You're going to have to get a barricade permit. You know, depending on the size of your event, you might have to get the fire department to sign off. Depending on how long the street's going to be closed, you're going to have to talk to two or three more departments. So the complexity of your event and where it is and how long it is and how big it is impacts how complicated your special event permit is.
And you start with your department if you wanted to do a festival, or is there another area that you need to go to first?
Yeah, our department, among a lot of other things that our department does, we're kind of the portal for special event permits. And we have a really, really, really helpful staff that will talk you through things. And if you kind of have an idea, I encourage you to either reach out to successful festival organizers or reach out to our special events department and talk to somebody about how to do it. And I know that there's a lot of festival organizers out there. One of their favorite things to complain about is the special event permit process. And that's something that under this new administration, we've been really focused on. And we are very optimistic that we're going to have a simplified process and something online for people in the next, you know, few months. So it would really change the complexity of getting all those signatures and talking with all those departments.
Let's go to Catherine in Albuquerque. Hey there, Catherine. What do you want to share about festivals?
Well, all this time, no one has mentioned Doggy Dash and Dawdle, and it's a really great event. And you don't have to have a dog, and it supports Animal Humane and all of their great programs. And You just have to like dogs if you want to go to it.
What exactly is going on? Are dogs just running around or?
Well, sometimes, but not intentionally. it's a big fundraiser. There's a 5K run and a 2K walk, or is it? I forget the length of the run because I only ever do the dawdle I walk. And it's the first Sunday of November. I think it's Sunday. Let's see. Yes. The first Sunday of November. And it is... There's a fee if you want to run or, you know, participate in the walk or the run.
You know what, Catherine? We'll get some of that info on our website to share more with folks if they're interested in the Doggy Dash and Dawdle. And David, we're getting close to the end of the hour. Any advice that you want to give to anybody who, you know, wants to start their own festival? Don't do it.
Well, that would be advice you could take and perhaps a benefit. Well, I sort of entered the Lavender Festival. It already had been formed. But over the years, we have grown and added complications. But we've been able to resolve all these issues mostly well before the festival. But I would do what, say one thing, put a plug in for the week after the Lavender Festival is the Garlic Festival.
Oh, okay.
At our Growers Market. Just up the street a mile, where the weekend market is held every Saturday, so it'll feature garlic festival. So please, if you're rested up from lavender, go get some garlic. But about there's hurdles, but they get more complicated if you start serving beer and wine. But those are easily, as long as you obey the rules and put up the fencing, and make sure that all the vendors have their proper licenses, and make sure that the food vendors have their health department certificates, because they want on-site inspection of your food truck.
So a lot of things to check off the list, a lot of things to go through when you're planning something like this.
And as far as I know, there's like no master list you can get online, because it varies from community to community and perhaps even from year to year. So it's like you get to find your way through it and ask more questions.
Dr. Sanchez, is there things on your website like a master list or something like that, that, you know, like where to go, what to do?
Well, in many ways, the special event permit process is that master list. And again, like David was saying, it kind of depends on your festival and the complexity of it. And if you have food and if you have fire and if it's indoors, if it's outdoors, if you're blocking a street. And so it's very hard to just give people the list of things. But the special event permitting process asks you all of those questions and kind of points you to the things that you're gonna have to do if you say yes to something. So, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we've reached the end of our hour. I want to say thank you so much to our guests, Nikki Panagopoulos, David Hudson, Robert Mendez, Dr. Shel Sanchez. Also, thanks to everybody who called in today. The conversation doesn't have to end here. You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org or use the hashtag #letstalknm on Twitter. Leave us a comment on Facebook, KUNM Radio. And if you missed any of our show today and you'd like to share it with your friends, you can find the audio of the show at KUNM.org or subscribe to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast. Our theme music is by D Numbers out of Santa Fe. Moreno Spencer is our engineer. Celia Rainey screened our calls. Mallory Begay live tweeted the show today. Hannah Colton produced today's show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Monica Brain, and this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.